Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where each and every week I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 337, How to Transfer Your Architecture Firm Ownership to Your Employees. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM specifications, and so much more, all for free. Gusto, easy online payroll benefits, and HR built for modern small businesses like ours. And Monograph, the time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects. Justin Goodbread, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Mark, thanks for having me, brother.
It's great to have you here. Justin Goodbread is the owner of financiallysimple.com, a nationally recognized financial planner, financial educator, wealth manager, author, speaker, and an entrepreneur. He has 20 plus years of experience starting, buying, owning, and selling businesses. Recently, Justin published his first book, The Ultimate Sale. In it, he shows business owners how to create long-term value and accelerate growth in their company with the ultimate goal of selling the business for top dollar when the owner wants to retire. And I think that a bunch of ears just perked up because I know that there are a lot of architects out there who have those questions, because architects are notorious for starting their business, just chugging along through life, building their business, never really thinking about how it all ends, right? It's someday it's all going to end. However that ends, you may want to retire. You may pass away. Whatever that ultimate end is, your company will end. And so planning that end is an important strategy that we should be taking care of here. And Justin is an expert in exit strategies for small businesses. And so I invited him on the show here to share his knowledge with the Entree Architect Podcast. Justin Goodbread, thank you for joining me here today.
Mark, man, I'm excited. I love the fact that you just laid out the very premise that I always talk about, and that is that we will leave our business, whether it's through a death, a divorce, a disagreement, somehow or another, whether it's a retirement or sale, whatever, we're going to leave our business. That we may never retire. We may like work till we're dead as business owners. I mean, that's the way I think many times, but dude, we are going to leave our business. So it's something that we need to think about sincerely.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get into that conversation, I want to know more about you. I want to dive a little bit into your backstory. Share your origin story. What inspired you to follow the passion that you're on today? Because you're clearly a passionate guy about what you're doing. Instantly connected when we signed on here. Clearly passionate about financial management, financial strategies. Share your origin story. How did you get to where you started here?
Yeah, so I grew up in South Georgia. I'm on the coast there in South Georgia. And I was homeschooled most of my life. And my mom and dad, they had this desire to teach us business. So at age 15, long story short, my dad convinced me to start a landscape business. He basically said, son, if you don't have a job by Friday, don't come home. And I was like, yes, sir, pops. And we got him pops. Yes, pops, whatever you say to pops. And so long story short, started a grass cutting business. And by the time my brother and I, who was about 4 years younger than me, by the time I reached 18, we were making more money than my mom, who has a master's level in nursing, and my dad, who worked for the Georgia Port Authority. And here we are, two snotty nose kids, as they used to call us, running around making a ton of money. So I went to see this financial guy, right, at some big popular name company. And he's like, he sits back in his all-knowing chair, pulled his glasses down his nose, and kind of looked down on me saying, well, son, when you get more money, come back and see me. I'm like, you know, forget you. I'm making more money probably than you are at this point. So at that point, I hated Wall Street. So I dove into this world of business, right? Now, here I am somewhat dealing with Wall Street some years later. But long story short, I've started and sold three businesses for a profit. I love business. I eat, sleep, drink business. There's not a book right now at Barnes & Noble or Amazon in business that I haven't read. I read a book a week and have since I was 16. Dude, I love business. Most of all, though, I love watching business owners not become a statistic. I love that. I love if I can pour my passion and my drive and our company and the resource that we have behind us and making business owners not become a statistic, that's what I'm after. And so the statistics that scares me is 80%. So once somebody once asked me, Mark, they said, hey, Justin, what's your biggest fear in life? And I said, the graveyard. He said, what do you mean, scared of dying? I'm like, no, I'm scared that whenever I reach my death that I didn't leave it all on the field, you know, like an old good basketball player or soccer player or whatever, that didn't leave it all on the field. You know, 80% of businesses never sell. 80% of businesses never sell. And only 4% of businesses actually sell for what we, the business owners, think they're worth. So if you look at those two numbers, realizing that the architectural world is not that dissimilar from the dental world or the any other professional service industry, myself included, we have perhaps 80% of our net worth tied up in our business, an asset that is more than likely 80% of it's not going to, we have a statistic, we're not going to sell it. So here we are pouring blood, sweat, and tears, Mark, into our business, and there's got to be a better way, man. So years ago, I started out this project, Financially Simple, to try to educate and give away 99.99% of the knowledge that I've gleaned from starting and selling businesses and now from helping hundreds of service industries across our country. And it's a passion that I see trying to change the paradigm, trying to help our business owners not be a statistic. So that's a little bit about me, my passion. You're right. I love it. I eat, sleep, and drink this thing, brother. So it's let's try to help some folks.
Yeah, 100%. I, you know, this is a topic that we absolutely need to talk about in the architecture world. I am sure that architects are much higher than 80% in terms of not selling their business. Most don't. Most don't even have an exit strategy. Most just close the door and walk away. Many of them transition to employees, you know, and the firm continues on. Very few sell or merge with other companies. And so this is an important strategy or an important conversation. This might be the beginning of the rest of the life of everybody who's listening here. So where do we start? If we are a small firm, we just started our small firm, or we've been practicing for 20 years and we don't have a strategy for how it all ends, what's the beginning? Where do we start?
Yeah. So, you know, you're right. Architects are probably a little bit more dismal in the statistics. I didn't look specifically for architects in that number. And I would have to agree with you, Mark. It's probably a little bit more dismal than 80%. But you start the same place that I start, the entrepreneur, doctor, any of us in white collar profession, we all start the same place. We got to identify where we're at today. Okay, so we always start our clients, and we have several architectural firms that we've done this with. We start them up just a basic, very boring, plain Jane financial plan. Now, I'm not talking about selling Wall Street crap. I'm talking about where are we at today financially, and how do we get here? Do we have real estate? Do we have business? Do we have a little bit of 401k? Whatever the number is, you know, how much debt, how much assets do we have today? Once we know where we're at, then we got to figure out where we're going. So I liken this to a road trip here from East Tennessee, Knoxville, out to Portland, Oregon, oftentimes. And I say, if I'm headed to Portland, I realize I could probably swim, take a boat, take a plane, take a train, drive a car, ride a bike. I can get there a number of different ways, but I also know where I'm going. So by knowing where I'm starting and where I'm going, then I can devise the best strategy to help me reach there. Very similar to how you guys approach your business. Very similar. You have to know what that client has is their end vision in mind. You also have to know where they're starting from. So it's not that dissimilar. So we always start with a position of where are you going? and where you're at. And then once we know that, then what we analyze is what's called the gap or the value gap. It's a mathematical number that we can surmise from the strategy saying, you know, Mark, in your particular case, we got to figure out how to get an extra $600,000 over the next 6 years, or we got to come up with $2 million. You may be a young architect over the next 20 years. Once we know what our gap is, then we can figure out the strategy, how we're going to drive from Knoxville to Portland. We can work on all the details. Are we going to take our time? Are we going to go through Canada? Are we going to go around through Texas? How are we going to go logistically from point A to point B? So once you know where you're at and where you're going, then it's a matter of filling in the various routes or the various paths to get us where we want to be.
How do we know where we're going? Knowing where you are is pretty straightforward, right? You do your financial management, you look at your books, you look at what you have and what you don't have, what you're missing. And then you look into the future and say, okay, I want to, retire when I'm 75 and I want to sell my business.
So here's the way I would help you analyze on where you're going, because that's not an uncommon question. Most of us, like you said, can realize exactly where we're at. And we know all the problems that we face to get to where we're at, right? We know all the pitfalls. Right. What we don't know is the pitfalls in front of us. We don't know the cautionary things in our journey from where we're at to where we're going to be. So I ask typically a couple of questions. These are pretty hard hitting, so I apologize in advance. But here's some things to make you think. So, Mark, I'm going to use you as an example for our dialogue here, and this is applicable to anybody, okay? By no means am I picking on your brother. But, Mark, if you had unlimited resources today, what would your life look like today? And then as you start analyzing that question, you're now starting to figure out what's the top values for you. Now, statistically, it's going to be your family, your friends, your faith. That's statistically where it's going to come into play. But you may have some other things that, if I had unlimited resources, I have two or three employees in the company that I really want to see them take this thing over. Or, I'm done. I don't want to be an architect anymore. I'm over this thing. So that's one question we have. Another question we may say is, hey, Mark, I hate to tell you news, brother, but you just got diagnosed with a terminal illness that you're going to pass away sometime in the next 10 years. We don't know the date of death, but we know it's going to be in the next 10 years, guaranteed. What would you change? And so now we put a little bit of time, a length on our question to say not just unlimited resources, but now we put a time length. And now ultimately, Mark, what happens is that we start internalizing what really matters to us. And it may be, hey, look, Justin, look, I'm 50 years old, I'm 60 years old, I'm 40 years old, whatever the age is, my wife and I, my family and I, myself, et cetera, we want to travel the world, man. Or, hey, I heard somebody just yesterday, buddy, I want to buy a small piece of land in the middle of the mountains where no one can see me, have a little horse, have a little tractor, and just go play. And if I could do that tomorrow, I would make it happen. And that's the dream. So once you can envision, I want to go to Portland, Oregon, and I want to see this, and I want to see that, and I want to spend this much time here, and you can start putting the picture to where your mind and your desires are, now you can identify where you're going.
Do you write that down when you start thinking about what you want? Do you write a narrative for that?
Absolutely. So the way we actually have our clients do this is we send husband and wife or our spouses or partners into separate rooms. And we say, write down your top 10 ambitions in life. So whenever my wife and I did this, which we do on a regular basis as clients of our firm ourselves, one of my very top things I want to see, man, is I want to see the Northern Lights. I want to go up into the Arctic and just sit there in one of these igloos and watch the Northern Lights. My wife wants to go to Bora Bora and stay in one of those huts over the ocean, right? So totally different. So we have this dream one day that we're going to go from the Northern Lights down to Bora Bora on like this 3-week trip. Well, that's a top one and a top one for us, right? So now if we know that, we can start saying, here is where we're going. There's several studies, many people have read this, that if we actually can verbalize, put a picture around, put a text around what we're actually trying to achieve, we come out with a greater, I think it's 86% according to the Harvard study success rate of actually achieving that through written and verbal or pictorial type of a format. So yeah, absolutely, we write that down and then we hold people accountable to it.
Right.
See?
Right. And we go through a very similar process in business planning. We do that same process. We call it a vision narrative. And we ask our members to write a vision narrative, write that story of what their life would look like if they had unlimited funds and unlimited barriers. And then you build a business, you plan your business to grow to that point. What we're doing is we're using that same strategy in our conversation to look at the end of that business. So it's still a business plan, but it's an exit plan. It's an exit strategy. How do you achieve where you want to achieve at the ultimate level? And then what do you do with it once you achieve that? So once we write that narrative and we write that story, What's the next step? What do we do next?
Yeah, now it's a matter of figuring out that gap. So let's say in your narrative that we just described that we got to come up with $500,000. Okay. Well, that's a different direction, a different set of events that we have to move about than someone who says, hey, I need to come up with $1.5 million. Okay. So let's say it's something ultra simple. We may not have to do anything in the business itself. We may be able to just take cash flow and meet that need just through traditional planning. Oftentimes, though, for a small business owners, I don't know if you're familiar, Mark, with this term or the old statement, the cobbler's kid's shoes are never shod.
Oh, sure.
In other words, you know, we deal with our own problems and we take care of everybody else before we take care of ourselves. So many times we business owners, we've been so good at caring for our team and caring for the customers who we all have the honor and privilege of serving that we don't take care of ourselves. So oftentimes we have to go and do things radical in the business in order to make that business more successful, more profitable, more sellable. And so once, if that ends up being the case where it has to be a sellable business, then what we have to do is now figure out the matrix it's going to take in order to drive the value of the company up. So the way we look at it is there's 256 points in a valuation of a business. So if I were going to value your company today, I can analyze it from 256 points. Much similar to trying to backwards engineer an architectural drawing, I'll backwards engineer the value of the company to say, hey, look, I'm going to ultra simplify something here, but let's say, hey, Mark, you know what? You've been a solo architect for years now. Let's bring on a junior associate. In order to do that, we've got to bring on some more revenue for throughput. In order to bring on more revenue, we have to have some systems. In order to have systems, we have to have the money. In order to have the money, we have to spend some money. So now we got to start off with a marketing plan. What does that look like? And how do we attract the right client? How do we identify the target persona of your business? So whenever we analyze these 256 points, brother, then we can say, what do we have to do in the structure of the business, the operations of the business? What do we have to do in the personal finance? What do we have to do in the tax strategy? What do we have to do in the employee, the marketing, the sales, the people, legal, all these different strategies to put together a plan to help you reach your goals?
We will return to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Unless you're working for one of the top architecture firms in the world, you know what it's like to work with limited resources. But there's one resource that you can access no matter what size your architecture firm, Arcat.com. Arcat is the online solution for your building product information needs. They offer BIM objects, CAD details, specifications, and much, much more from leading manufacturers from all over the world. Research building products and get the information you need all in the same place, fast and easy. And best of all, it's free. Arcat doesn't charge you anything for these resources. You don't even need to register or give them your email. And when I say it's free, there's no catch. Visit Arcat.com and try it out. Search for the resources that you need and Arcat will deliver. That's Arcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. Arcat.com. Build better. Taking care of your employees has never been more important than now. For years, Gusto's been helping more than 100,000 small business owners run payroll, offer benefits, onboard new employees, and more. They call it the People Platform. And it doesn't just look nice, and it does look nice. It also works. Your payroll taxes are filed, deductions are calculated, and your team gets paid. You can even offer health insurance and 401ks as you grow. As a listener of the Entree Architect podcast, you will get 3 months free after your first payroll when you go to entrearchitect.com/gusto. That's entrearchitect.com/gusto. And make sure that you let them know that you're a member of the Entree Architect community. Gusto, the people platform. Visit entrearchitect.com/gusto today. Are you tired of spreadsheets? Of using spreadsheets to keep track of your project plans, your budgets, your staff, your time? Spreadsheets. Our friends at Monograph know what that's like because they're architects too. They know all about that spreadsheet mess that you're dealing with. So they did something about it. Monograph is a time tracking and project management tool built for architects by architects to respond to the challenges that small and medium-sized firms face on their quest to a profitable business. With Monocraft's integrated suites of tools, you'll stay on track and on budget without the overhead of wrangling spreadsheets every day. Improve your firm's operations today. Try Monograph for free at entrearchitect.com/monograph. Ditch the spreadsheets. Visit entrearchitect.com/monograph and try Monograph today for free. Arcat, Gusto, and Monograph. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So once you have that ultimate goal and you have your strategy in place in terms of filling that gap, you know, understanding what the gap is and then putting together a plan to fill the gap, which would ultimately allow you to achieve that plan. What is there anything between those two pieces?
Well, what you just described takes about 12 months to 18 months to walk through that. Mm-hmm. So if we start through the personal side of planning, it takes typically 3 to 6 months to make the, I grew up on the ocean. I always say that we have holes in our boats. All of us do. Our personal finances is not what's going to get us to our destination. It's going to be our business ultimately. Okay. I don't think Wall Street has the answer for us business owners. We, the business owner, is going to be driving our own future. So, but we have to make our personal finances secure. So we're plugging all the holes in the boat first. Once we get the boat on top of the water and it's able to cruise, right? Now we're dealing with the business. So once we identify the weakest areas in your business, now we have to decide on, out of those 256 points, how are we going to stack the blocks that's not going to stress you, the owner, or the team, or the customers, or the pocketbook in such a way that you give up, right? Because I can come up with a great plan and you end up giving up on it because it's too cumbersome, too complicated. So once we stack the blocks in a metric that you psychologically can deal with, you emotionally, physically, financially, everything can deal with, then it's a matter of going through the blocks and creating buy-in amongst your mind, your family, and your team, and your consultants that's going to hold you accountable over that length of time. Where it gets interesting is this, and I'm sure everybody, when I say this, we're all going to say, oh yeah, that's right. We've all had that tough customer, that tough client who likes to change things on us on a regular basis, and we end up having to go back to the drawing board, literally, in your case. Same thing happens in business, because I would dare say there's not a person who's listening to this podcast whenever this airs that could have predicted in December of 2019 that we're going to be dealing with what we're dealing with today in the United States, around the world. No one could have done that.
Right.
So the plans that we set forth in December, we had now to strongly modify that for our business owners to keep them slowly moving to their destination during this crisis, pandemic opportunity is what I call it, for us business owners. So once we set the destination out, then we've got to monitor it, man, and make sure that if there's a roadblock on our path from Knoxville to Portland, if there's travel change, that we are still moving through all the waves, through all the turbulence, through all the economic issues, through our personal issues that we all deal with to that destination. So it's really not a 1, 2, 3, thank you, sir, let's go on. It comes back to a full process with one thing in mind. How are we going to get you to your goal? How are we going to get you to your destination? And every single piece of advice has to advance that cause.
And there may be many different ways of achieving that ultimate goal, right? I mean, when you identify how much your firm is worth and how much you can get for it at the end, what you do with that value could result in many different choices, right? You can sell it. You could transfer it to employees. You can close the door, or you can merge with another company. Can you go through each one of those possible strategies?
Sure. So I'll kind of take those four, and we could go on for hours on all of these strategies, guys. But yeah, so how are we going to get rid of the business ultimately, right?
Right.
And we kind of really need to know who our buyer is going to be. And so we first of all look at, are we going to go out to competition and sell our business to a competitor? That's a whole different strategy than, let's say, I want to move it to an employee-owned position, right?
Right.
And that's a totally different strategy than I'm going to sell it to some venture capitalist firm or some angel investing firm that wants to suck us into an inventory portfolio, right? So we ultimately need to know, in our destination, what are we trying to achieve? So I can talk about my life a little bit because I'm being a little more open. I have a financial planning firm. I have a firm that's a business advisory firm. I have four businesses all circled together in one. We have a team that's nationally based. I realize that I could go out to a competitor and sell my company and get a lot of money. I know that, okay? But that's not who I am. I want to take my team that has helped us get to here and is going to take us to the next destination. And I want them to have this moment in their life whenever this thing moves through this world of transition, that they have this take this job and shove it moment, that they have this check of some sort that they said, holy cow, look at what we did. That's my heart. So now I know that in that particular case, I can sell an ESOP in place, and we kind of talk through that. I can go to a treasury stock position. I can go through phantom stock positions. I can go through hard equity positions. I can do a number of things in order to make that one particular play. On the other hand, let's say I'm all by myself, and I don't have any employees other than maybe some 1099 subcontractors, but yet I do want to have this asset that I can sell. Well, maybe I now restructure my business to where it's a royalty type of a business where I'm taking my knowledge, almost like Frank Betts did back in the day in your world, and he put it out there on the internet and made his royalty style of business. So there's a lot of different ways to transact and transfer our business from one location to whichever paradigm you choose to go into. I think that you had said that, Justin, we have a lot of people interested in these employee-owned businesses, which is common in the architectural space, by the way, because it's such a close-knit family. Am I correct in that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to bring it back to that because I think that there are a lot of people listening who listen to the scenario that you just created that you do want to transition to the employees and benefit. You want to benefit to the maximum that you can, but you also want to transfer that value to people that you care about because they've helped you build it. You care about them as people and you want the firm to continue on beyond you. And you have some people that you trust who can do that. So how do you do that?
You know, one of the most popular statements or concepts that I hear in the architectural world is the ESOP plan. Let's deal with that a little bit, and then let's get into some more realistic strategies that work in an architectural world. So I can tell you that the ESOP plan, if you go to financiallysimple.com and just search ESOP, I have one of the top ESOP attorneys that I actually interviewed by the name of Ben Wells out of Maryland, up in Maryland, who's one of the top in the country. He's a dear friend of mine who structures ESOPs. And he and I did about an hour-long conversation on the ins and outs, the details of an ESOP. And you can check that on financiallysimple.com. But here's the deal with the ESOP. The overwhelming majority of small businesses are not good candidates for ESOP. So here's some rule of thumbs. These are generic rule of thumbs. These are not always the case. You typically need to have more than about 15 employees. That's the first rule of thumb. So that's going to cancel out a lot of our small or solopreneurs or maybe a family office style architectural firms. You also have to have enough equity, enough hard assets that it's going to be able to float the debt liability on the ESOP. And oftentimes small businesses just don't have that. Right. You typically get up into a multi-leveraged or multi-owner type facility before you deal with an ESOP. Now, if you have greater than 15 or so employees and you have enough structural capital or enough capital setback to deal with this, then you got to get into the debt structuring with the bank. Is there enough dollars in order to make it work? Do you want to have $10 million? How's your valuation going to work? It gets extremely complicated for the average business. Okay. I've been in the business world now for over 25 years, and I've only dealt with one ESOP out of thousands of businesses. And the reason why is they're so dadgum complicated. All right.
Yeah.
Even in my own business, we have almost 15 or so employees, and we're multi-state. We have multiple owners at this point that are coming on board. And I couldn't pull an ESOP together right now, not with the structure of our company. So what do I do?
Right.
What are some other strategies? So, you know, a really good strategy is that of a key employee that you can do a leverage sell or a leverage buyout. So we have an architectural firm here in East Tennessee. There were two partners. They wanted to merge in with another two partners. The two, and I got to be careful for confidentiality reasons, but they were a little older. And they were a little younger in the two sets there, and they had these two separate businesses. We structured a 10-year buyout, and we put together all the parameters so that the clients all came into one new organized company and that they are now harmoniously moving through this strategy, even through this trouble in times that we're dealing with. And the selling individuals are now have confidence that their long-term friends, their long-term customers, their long-term vendors are taken care of. And the younger individuals are excited because they are able to, so to speak, according to them, ride on the coattails of the more seasoned architect. So that's a leverage buyout. That's not uncommon. There's another firm in East Tennessee. It's a really prominent firm that you had one major shareholder in the company. He brought in a couple of other architects over a period of 15, 20 years. He had this major asset. that now he put treasury stock in place, which is something I'm looking at in my own company, to where I'm going to have my everybody rank and file from the HCs, highly compensated employees, those who actually own hard equity in the company, down to the person perhaps cleaning the toilet. I'm not trying to be derogatory. I'm trying to say everybody in the company can actually have some equity in the company. And you do that through a number of legal documents, do that through some valuation. What happens, though, ultimately, is if you're trying to shift your business, and this is where the paradigm, I don't want to get lost in the details over what we're trying to accomplish. What we're trying to accomplish is this, friends. We business owners are often at the epicenter of our business. Everything revolves around us. In order for you to get maximum value, you have to remove yourself from the epicenter. You have to remove yourself outside and become irrelevant, which is hard for many of us, become irrelevant. So what you have to do is slowly bring in those colleagues or those friends or systems or operational structures to where a potential buyer, whoever they may be, outside or inside, can now step into that epicenter and run the business. So whether it's an ESOP, whether it's a phantom stock, a treasury stock, a hard equity, a merge buyout, a self-canceling installment note, whatever it may be, you have to design it for the success of the buyer, not for the success of the seller. Okay? That's the key. So there's lots of different strategies, and there have been books upon books upon books written about it. It ultimately goes back to, where do you want to be and how big's the gap we have to cover? How big do the infrastructure we have to build? Do you have the team in place? Do you not have the team in place? At the end of the day, we're all trying to get move this asset that's a highly illiquid asset to one of liquidity so we can reach our goals.
Yeah. Well, that gives us a lot of information and a lot of information to think about. It gives us some direction. So I appreciate that. I have one last question before we wrap things up, before I ask you the question that I ask everybody. But I have a majority of our listenership are sole practitioners. One man, one woman show. And they're listening to us and say, well, I don't have employees. And I don't really know how to, even consider what we're talking about here in terms of, getting to the end and having some sort of value in my one man show. So what do you say to those people?
Learn tax code, hire an expert tax planner, an expert tax advisor on the financial planning side. If you plan your business outright, and I can tell you this is not uncommon. We have solopreneurs is what I call them.
Yep.
Okay. I used to be one, so I dealt with this. I speak the language, and we work with literally dozens of solopreneurs. You can control everything, and chances are you're not going to have a business that somebody's going to sell. That's the reality situation. Right. So you would have what's called a lifestyle business. And as a lifestyle business, what you can control is your time. But what robs us of our time are distractions, the Internal Revenue Service, the insurance world, and the interest world. Those three, four things. So we can control our time due to good management. The Internal Revenue Service, if you utilize it right, you can make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and not send the majority of money out to the IRS if you did it right. But it's all going to come back to your personal desires, your personal lifestyle. What's sad to me, Mark, many times is we have the family style business who they make $100,000 of gross revenue. They spend $100,000 of gross revenue either through the business or their personal lifestyle, and they're broke. And unless that pattern is changed through to some professional help, because remember the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again. So we've got to change our paradigm if you're in the solopreneur. If you say, Justin, man, that's not me. I'm not broke. I'm actually doing quite well. Great. I want to give you a fist bump through the system right now if I could. But you can drastically improve your chances of success due to some great tax planning in your state and in our federal system. Remember, the Internal Revenue Code is about 5 inches thick if you use the abridged version, and only about 15 pages there tell us what we have to pay. The rest of us tells us how we don't have to pay things. And so if we can learn the code for our advantage as solopreneurs and couple that with a great, awesome financial plan, then you can rock it out and reach your goals.
That's great advice. I think a lot of people just exhaled and said, oh, well, there is a way that we can make this work out for us. So thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you the one question that I ask everybody on the show. What is one thing a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? This one might be very easy for the conversation that we had, but what is your suggestion for somebody to start right now?
It's not an easy thing to do, but it's the one most vital thing that we all have to do in business, and that's called systematization. We want to systematize everything we can. So think about this. The McDonald's brothers knew how to make a heck of a hamburger, but I dare say that I can outcook McDonald's hamburgers today. I mean, my hamburger can make your tongue beat your brains out. They're so good. I mean, they are mouthwatering good. On the other hand, I'm not Ray Kroc, who's at home making millions of dollars a second, literally probably, by having 16-year-olds learn how to cook French fries without burning the restaurant down, right? Even in a solopreneur business or a multi-size architectural firm, you can systematize things that free up your time. And in freeing up your time, you can become more efficient either with your time or with your resources. So there's not a business out there that can't create systems which help us to improve productivity, profitability, and ultimately transferability, right? So that'd be the one thing I'd say is focus on your systems.
Right. Those systems all have value. They add to the asset that you have as a business. His name is Justin Goodbread. Financiallysimple.com is the website. You can go there and find all sorts of information. You can connect with Justin there. Justin, you have a bunch of things going on at Financially Simple. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So Financially Simple is our hub. We also have a podcast where we've dealt with 3 years of teaching, and now we're dealing with a couple of different segments from professionals and business owners around the country and around the world. You can connect with us on social media. We have books that are on Amazon. There are courses. If you need help on strategic planning, we have courses on our strategic planning sites. There's so much out there that we've done. I go back to my fear. My fear is I'm going to take what God's given me as my talents and my abilities and hit the graveyard one day and not left it on the field. And so we have a team here that's dedicated to taking what we learn as an organization and putting it out there to help business owners not be that statistic, right? It doesn't matter if you're a solopreneur or a multi-level business. It doesn't matter. We can change the paradigm for ourselves and our future generations. So that's the message, brother.
Justin, this has been a great conversation. Thank you for the inspiration, the motivation, and the information. Thanks for being here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Brother, thanks for having me. Look forward to seeing what you guys are going to be doing in your business as well.
You've been listening to episode 337 with Justin Goodbread. That was a good one. Put that one in the archive. That's something that you will be able to reference when you need it. Maybe you need it now, so you're welcome. Don't forget to check all the resources at entrearchitect.com. That's where we have everything that you might need. We have a membership, a mastermind groups. We have a free Facebook group. If you're interested in joining the membership, it's free for 30 days. EntreeArchitect.com/join. It's easy to remember. EntreeArchitect.com/join. Join our powerful mastermind groups, the Entree Architect Mastermind. Those are professional peer groups. EntreeArchitect.com/mastermind. And you can join on over at the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. Tons of engagement, lots of fun. If you have a question for anything, post it over there. If you're an architect, architecture student, if you've been trained as an architect, you are welcome to join us. EntreeArchitect.com/group to request membership over there. That's a private Facebook group. So if you're interested in joining us over there, it's 6,000 members over there. It's a great group. If you have anything that you need help with a better business, we have it for you over at Entree Architect. The podcast, this podcast, the Entree Architect podcast, is a proud member of the Gable Media Network, GABLmedia.com. Subscribe to this and all the Gable Media podcasts at GableMedia.com. We have some really super interesting shows. We have a playlist for you. Just go over there and subscribe to every single one of them. Six podcasts right now. We have two in development, so watch for what's coming. You're going to like what's coming. You're going to like what's coming. I'm really excited about it. Go subscribe to this show, Entree Architect Podcast, Build Your Brand Podcast. We're wrapping up the first season of Build Your Brand Podcast. Go listen to the entire 12 episodes from beginning to end. That is a masterclass on branding from Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand. Spaces Podcast, Demetrius Lynch's podcast, Spaces Podcast, Arcaspeak Podcast, Cormac and Evan. Practice Disrupted. I love Practice Disrupted in the conversations they're having. They're talking about how do we remain relevant into the future as architects. Evelyn Lee and Janine Chastain at Practice Disrupted. And Evan Troxel's podcast, Troxel. Troxel. Diving deep into technology and the future of architecture. at Troxel. Super interesting conversations. Do not miss these six podcasts. Go subscribe, make them your weekly playlist, and you will be very happy that you did. We have episodes, new episodes every week over there. New shows in development. Pay attention. They're coming. You're going to like them. Go right now. Go check them out. Go subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. Be well, my friends. Be healthy, be happy, safe, and secure. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening this week. Have a great one.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.